not correct.
Good evening. My name is Ben Brasso. I'm the Assistant Public Information Officer for the Adirondack Park Agency, and I will serve as the hearing officer for the public comment component of this hearing. We are conducting this hearing pursuant to Section 816 of the APA Act and in accordance with the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan. As stated earlier, this is an opportunity for you to make comments on the record regarding proposed amendments to the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan. Please be aware that this is not a question and answer session. Staff will be available after the hearing to answer any questions that you might have. I will call speakers based on the order in which individuals signed up. We have 10 for today's hearing. In the interest of fairness to everyone who would like to speak, I request that each speaker please conclude their remarks at 3 minutes. You can add to your comments by also submitting written ones, which is encouraged. As you speak, I will indicate when you have 1 minute remaining with a raised finger like so. I'll be sitting over in that seat over there. And with an open hand at 3 minutes. Please conclude your remarks at that time. Thank you in advance for your cooperation. Our first speaker is Kathy Pedler.
Okay, thank you. Kathy Pedler, Director of Advocacy for Adirondack Mountain Club. ADK greatly appreciates the agency's updates to address accessibility. All deserve to be welcomed and have the opportunity to experience the forest preserve. We agree with the inclusion of the wheelchair exemption in the definition of motor vehicle, but OPDMDs should not be exempted from the definition of motor vehicle. OPDMDs are motor vehicles that are not specifically designed for use by people with mobility disabilities. Many classes of OPDMDs will certainly impact trails and resources. ADA regulations provide that in determining whether a particular other power-driven mobility device can be allowed in a specific facility, a public entity would assess if the use would create a substantial risk of serious harm to the immediate environment or natural or cultural resources. Public entities are also exempt from compliance if making modifications to policies, practices, or procedures would fundamentally alter the nature of the service program or activity. OPDMD use as motor vehicle use would fundamentally destroy the land classification and program of wilderness in the Adirondack Park, which certainly meets the ADA assessment and demonstration requirements to not allow OPDMD use in land classification areas of the forest preserve that currently do not permit motorized use. ADA regulations also exempt compliance when there is a direct threat to the health and safety of the user or others. The use of some classes of OPDMDs imposes a direct safety threat to those using them and to others users on trails and in areas not specifically designed for all-season motorized use, for example, natural surface hiking, biking, equestrian, and snowmobile trails. The Adirondack Park needs a comprehensive plan for accessibility and accessible features, including where different classes of OPDMDs are and are not appropriate. The current practice of determining OPDMD on a case-by-case basis must not continue. An OPDMD policy must be created. Not providing information upfront to those looking for accessible opportunities creates a barrier to access. An OPDMD policy would remove that barrier. An OPDMD policy should also reevaluate the CP3 program to be updated and incorporated following ADA guidance. In the Adirondack Park, a long-range comprehensive planning is the responsibility of APA, not the DEC. The APA must do the planning and develop the documents to provide guidance so that the use of OPDMDs on the forest preserve is in keeping both with the language of the ADA and the intent of the Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Ari Epstein.
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of the Adirondack Wilderness Advocates organization this evening, and I wanted to speak briefly about non-conforming structures. We support the removal of deadlines that have passed for non-conforming structures, but we think that the plan could incorporate stronger programmatic provisions for preventing future non-conforming structures from persisting in the park. We're particularly interested in inventory of non-conforming uses, building a backlog of non-conforming uses, and having ready-made plans that can be adapted as resources become available. We also ask considering adding procedures to classification of new acquisitions that address non-conforming uses upfront and incorporate their removal into the planning procedures. On beaver control structures, we agree that the priority should be working around beaver activity, especially in wilderness areas. We emphasize that should be taken over building control structures for beavers. On motorized vehicles, on foot trails, our position is that no public motorized access should be allowed in wilderness areas, period, with the exception of battery-powered wheelchairs. We wanted to note particularly that the Americans with Disabilities Act explicitly addresses how access is to be addressed in federal wilderness areas, and we would like to see that definition of wheelchairs and policy consistently applied to state wilderness areas as well, seeing as our wilderness program is modeled to and closely linked to that program. I'd also like to add to that that we have noted that in past UMP drafts, this connection has been explicitly acknowledged, including the 1999 High Peaks Wilderness Unit Management Plan, page 166. So I feel like Congress probably was not aware that New York State also has a wilderness management plan when it made that clarification, but I think it is a pretty clear expression of how they intended to reconcile wilderness management with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Finally, I want to applaud the APA and DEC for embracing visitor use management. We agree that carrying capacity and visitor use management are not mutually exclusive subjects, and we are very excited to see where that leads the program in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ari. David Pisanashi.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the APA for holding this session and also for giving me the opportunity to speak. First thing I'm going to talk about this handicap accessibility, and that's a very difficult issue for me to talk about, and you've got to be very sensitive with it. John Banta, once who was the former attorney for the APA, he made a comment once at a workshop that made a lot of sense to me. He said the Forest Preserve needs to be a refuge from technology. And that made a lot of sense, because in an era where now people want cell phone access and everything in wilderness areas, I mean, you compromise that. We're fortunate here. We have a New York State park system. We have a forest preserve, and they complement each other very well. Like, one area is very accessible, and the other area is kind of wild and remote, and that's what makes it unique. The other thing I want to say is, and first of all, don't sell yourself short on handicap accessibility. You got DEC campgrounds, which people can, you know, get around. There was a Galusha agreement that opened up some areas in the Moose River Plains. You know, there's ramps and things going to Hell Diver and Ice House Ponds. There's a San Leone Preserve, and you also got the CP3 permits that allow people to get in and out of places. So some things have been done. And also, the opportunity for handicap access is best suited in wild forests, where legally you can drive roads that you can go into, and you maintain roads, and, you know, people can get in that way. And it's also a good place for sportsmen to get in, because, you know, if you're hunting something, you're not going to drag a deer 3 miles out, you know. But the point is, you can't make it totally, you can do what you can, but you can't make the Forest Preserve totally handicap accessible everywhere, because it's just not possible. You don't, first of all, the resources aren't there. How are you going to, in wilderness areas especially, I mean, that's pretty much, you can't have motorized access there unless you change the definition of wilderness. You know, the thing is, to make some of those trails handicap accessible, you have to totally re-engineer them. I mean, they're pretty rough as it is. And that's pretty much my thoughts on handicap accessibility. Climate change, I'll talk about that next. First of all, you got to believe it's, yes, I've got 1 minute left, okay, I'll be quick. First of all, you got to believe climate change is real. It sounds like you guys, most of you guys believe it's real. It's not just made up. It's not a hoax created by the Chinese or anything. Because when I hear that, the conversation has to stop. Let me tell you what I've seen with climate change. I maintain trails on the Taconic Crest Trail, which is on the, it's a trail system that goes along the border of Massachusetts, New York, and Vermont. And what I see is mild winters where you have 50 degrees and you can get up there and do work in the winter. I see very extreme storms in the summer where you have a lot of blowdown and you have to get up there and clean it out constantly. Whereas years ago, you had a lot of blowdown in the winter, and when you got up there and cleaned it out, it was pretty much done. And you might have some work to do in the summer that you can get up there and do. Now, with 90 degree days and 90% humidity, you don't get up there and do as much as you used to. So that's how I see some of the stuff is changing. And the other thing I would notice is last year, July of last year, 2023, I was camping at Louis Lake, and there was a lot of washouts and everything, and Route 28N was washed out. So a lot needs to be done as far as making roads and trails more accessible. And the other thing too is, you know, trails need to be better engineered, switchbacks. The place to start is probably the High Peaks, because that gets the most use. So it's not going to be easy. Am I done, or do I have any time left?
Please finish up.
Oh, okay. And that's, those are pretty much my thoughts on it. I didn't really.
Thank you, David. Walter Link?
Before I speak, let me speak. Anybody here is concerned about my coughing, please be assured that this is from a cold month and a half ago, and there's just some strange residual congestion. I just can't get rid of it, it seems, very slowly. So I would be wearing a mask if I was concerned that I'm contagious with something. I could think of so many revisions to the master plan that would strengthen this law as needed. But here you are about to gut it. I object strongly in anger to your proposed revisions concerning motor vehicles and carrying capacity studies. But here I will only focus on the former. In that regard, you propose excising a whole growing category of engine-powered motor vehicles called OPDMDs from the master plan's definition of motor vehicles, which sensibly states, and which incongruently would continue to state, that they are any such vehicles incorporating a motor or an engine of any type for propulsion. This whole subset of motor vehicles, you simply want to not be considered motor vehicles within the law anymore. So, poof, they will all have been transported to somewhere else for this evasion, namely to a mere definition of them, in itself alarming, on page 21, and only there. They will reside in language nowhere else in the document. Do you clever lawyers actually not grasp what the ramifications would be? If these OPDMDs are, by a stroke of Governor Hochul's magic pen, to instantly become not motor vehicles, the obvious result will be that they will stand totally unaddressed by any of the master plan's guidelines for management and use. By the simple, straightforward logic and language of the law, then, that would mean all uses of OPDMDs would have to be considered conforming across lands of all classifications in the Adirondacks, not even restricted to people with disabilities. If you need to brush up a little, read the master plan's definition of nonconforming use on page 19 at your bedtime tonight and give it just a minute or two of thought. So, excuse me, but I have to say, the way I see it, only in some really effed up white man's law could you find this level of absurdity and either sloppy miscalculation or nefariousness. Furthermore, to close, by magnifying that perspective of mine, let me say this. All the green groups usually involved in Adirondack issues appear to me to be coming to a rare strength of solidarity in their objections to your key proposed revisions. It appears they agree that if they are approved, we, our society of people, would wrongly cause unacceptable impacts and disturbance to our fellow creatures across the whole of our shared protected natural world in the Adirondack Park. And yet, in what comes off as an attempt on your part to conjure up a powerful blessing for such damaging legal revisions to the master plan, you've had the brilliant idea of having New York State, through Governor Hochul, outright take the words of Orrin Lyons, a living Haudenosaunee chief and elder, for your preface to this document. The words of a man who directed those words in a speech to other people, not to us.
Please summarize, Walter.
And from whom you did not even ask permission. Orrin is a friend of mine. Orrin is not happy.
Thank you, Walter. Dave Gibson.
Thank you, Ben. I'm Dave Gibson. I'm with Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve. And thanks, APA, for holding this hearing. I was, back in the day, in 2001, a party to the Galusha Consent Order, which was a federal lawsuit that really opened the Adirondack Park in a good way to persons with disabilities and provided all sorts of opportunities and a disability coordinator within the department. I first knew Carol Frazier in those years, who's done an amazing amount of work increasing accessibility throughout the Adirondack region. And if these proposed changes to the master plan had been proposed then, I couldn't have signed that consent order because the agency at that time brought the National Park Service and other federal agencies, the Attorney General's Office of New York State, and the Department of Environmental Conservation together, along with nonprofit groups, and made them clearly aware of the fact that the consent order could not overturn the master plan in law, because the master plan is based fundamentally in Article 14 of the state constitution. But all sorts of opportunities could be made available in selected places in wild forest and intensive use areas in the Adirondacks, which was subsequently done. And the agency celebrated the consent order in its annual report 20 years ago and made the point clear that the master plan was intact while allowing lots of accessibility opportunities. For the first time, the agency is proposing to deconstruct the master plan in its fundamental requirements and strictures on motor vehicle use, as other speakers have stated. The APA is now saying that the existing master plan, quote, pigeonholes accessible opportunities into certain land classifications. It is not reflective of the ADA, of the spirit of the ADA. That's not true. The master plan prohibits or constrains motorized accessibility to the forest preserve as required by the state constitution. The master plan does not pigeonhole non-mechanized forms of access at all. The master plan is in the spirit of Article 14. The ADA is not forcing the agency or the department to make this radical change, nor are persons with disabilities, many of whom have no desire to expand motorized engines in wilderness, since doing so would erode the very thing they wish to experience on the same terms as I do. Wilderness conditions where nature holds the reins, not human convenience or motorized conveyances. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Amy Preventura.
Thank you. Amy Privatera, Legislative Associate, Adirondack Council, and thank you for the opportunity to provide comments tonight. The Council would like to begin by reminding the agency that the guiding mandate of the SLUMP is a natural resource protection is paramount. In reviewing a number of proposed changes, the same guiding mandate appears to be weakened. While human use of the forest preserve is and should be supported, it should not come at the cost of a weakening natural resource protections. The Council appreciates the agency's intent to clarify and modernize the carrying capacity language of SLUMP that translate directly to the unit management plan development and the Adirondack Forest Preserve management. We see an opportunity to strengthen the agency's proposed language in the following ways. Visitor use management framework. Again, we appreciate the intent to incorporate some VUMF language into the SLUMP. VUMF is data-informed and a transparent process used to guide visitor use management on public lands with the intent of protecting natural resources as well as the human experience. The Council would like to see the framework better captured in the amendment by referring to VUMF directly and incorporating additional elements such as review of laws and policies, stakeholder engagement, data-informed management, and more. We understand the agency may be hesitant to name a framework that could phase out in relevancy, but given that the SLUMP should be updated regularly, we see this as an easy point to navigate. In addition, there is an opportunity for the agency to clarify how VUMF and carrying capacities can and will work together to protect state lands to ensure the SLUMP is correctly interpreted and applied. Second, segmentation. The language used should make it clear that the carrying capacities of the resource are intended to be reviewed together to inform appropriate management actions. They should not be segmented out so that only one, such as social capacity, is informing management actions. Lands and waters. The proposed language should reiterate that carrying capacity assessments are for both lands and waters, not just lands. Natural resource protection. Again, the guiding mandate of the SLUMP should be repeated to remind agency and department that natural resource protection of state land is paramount over all else. The proposed language focuses on the human use aspect of VUM while deprioritizing the natural resource protection. Finally, the Council would like to reiterate our previous comments that the APA and DEC play separate and distinct roles in the Adirondack Forest Preserve. They are a checks and balances system created for health and protection of state lands in the park, and we encourage that separateness to be upheld. We look forward to providing more written comments, and thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Chris Amato.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks to APA for holding this hearing. I'm Chris Amato. I'm Conservation Director and Counsel for Protect the Adirondacks. We're going to be submitting some detailed written comments on all of the proposed amendments, but tonight I'm just going to focus on the accessibility issue. Persons with disabilities have access and should have expanded access to the Forest Preserve in a manner consistent with Article 14 and the Master Plan. PROTECT commends APA and DEC for its past and continuing efforts to provide expanded access to persons with disabilities by creating accessible trails and boat launches and campgrounds and other recreational facilities. This is great. Both agencies have done a great job. And part of the reason it's such a great job is that in doing so, both agencies have, for many years now, carefully balanced the demands of the ADA and of just plain human decency of providing access to persons of all abilities with the legal mandates that are imposed upon the Forest Preserve and the actions that take place in the Forest Preserve by both Article 14 and the Master Plan. Unfortunately, the proposed Master Plan amendments really are going to upset this balance. And first and foremost, the proposal to exclude other power-driven mobility devices from the definition of motor vehicle will, as Walt pointed out earlier, allow those devices to be used in all land use classifications, including wilderness, primitive, and canoe. Now, they have been banned from the beginning from being used in those classifications by anyone, and appropriately so, because that's the legal mandate. I think it's important to recognize that neither the ADA nor the Department of Justice's implementing regulations require this. In fact, to the opposite, both the ADA and the DOJ regulations specifically say that modifications to existing programs are not required if it would fundamentally alter the program. And I just want to quote from the programmatic EIS that was prepared for amendments to the State Land Master Plan. And that EIS says as follows: the wilderness, primitive, and canoe classifications generally prohibit the use of motor vehicles, motorized equipment, and aircraft. Any amendment to the plan which would sanction such uses in these areas would severely diminish the primitive character of those lands and should not be proposed. Noise intrusion is only one component of an area's character. The mere knowledge that motorized access is permissible diminishes an area's sense of remoteness. I note that Kevin referred to the fact that DEC is already evaluating OPDMD use, has a program doing this. That's news to me. As far as I know, DEC has no policy, at least one that's not public, for the use of OPDMDs. So it's a little disturbing to hear that the department is apparently deciding on use of these motor vehicles and where they'll be allowed in the Forest Preserve without a written policy, understood, without a written policy and without any oversight by the park agency. To the extent that OPDMD use may be appropriate in other land use classifications, not wilderness, canoe, or primitive, that should be addressed through CP3. The department has a policy for dealing with motorized use by persons with disability in the Forest Preserve. OPDMDs are just another class of devices that can be used in order to provide that kind of access. And we would encourage the APA to work with DEC to revise CP3 and deal with it through that, not by having OPDMDs become part of the master plan framework. So in closing, we would ask that APA withdraw the OPDMD provisions of the proposed amendments because they are both unnecessary and unlawful. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Gerald Delaney.
Thank you. Gerald Delaney, Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board. Local government is unified in being happy about the access for the disabled. We no longer have to. Us old men in the room remember when the disabled were left on a porch or left in the house. They are now entitled to some solitude. Unfortunately, there's a real lack of trust with DEC and APA at this point. That needs to be rectified. Perhaps APA and DEC haven't done a good enough job of actually educating the public about the whole issue and what is happening. I would say if none of us knew that there was an disability OPMD policy, it means that it's been working and you didn't even know it. And it hasn't been happening on Wilderness, or I'm sure you would have been to the APA complaining about it. So we believe what Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. This, we cannot leave our disabled people on the sidelines. They are entitled to the forest preserve as much as we are. And that really was the brunt of Galusha, which was an early settlement with the ADA Act. VUM, local government believes that that is a good thing. As we've studied it, we believe that VUM appropriately followed will come to the conclusion what carrying capacity is. Right now, local government believes that the projects that are undertaken are of high use areas, and that in those particular areas, there's once again communication issues. We hope that our take on that is correct, that as other areas are used with VUM, that all the stakeholders find that it is the appropriate way to do use management inside the park. And the review board will have more comments. The one last comment that we have for here tonight is, I heard the word aspirational statements in the State Land Master Plan. Since 1992, I believe it was, we had something in the master plan that said that the UMPs would be done and reviewed every 5 years. To take that out would seem logical for the simple fact that they aren't being done, but I don't think there's local government also believes it should stay in there as an aspirational statement, in that all of us should work towards getting them done. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. Bob Corbister?
Good evening. My name is Bob Grosick. I'm the trail coordinator for the New York State Snowmobile Association. First, I just want to thank everyone that's been participating in the slump review process. As I read through the proposed changes, I noticed that there's many snowmobile trails scheduled to be either closed permanently or relocated. I'd like to remind everybody of the economic impact that snowmobiling does have, and not only on the Adirondack Park, but statewide. We have over 220 clubs that are all volunteers working to maintain and promote snowmobiling, maintaining the trails and promote snowmobiling. And statewide, we have over 10,700 miles of trails. The closure and relocation of the trails could have drastic negative impacts on the local communities. We ask that NYSA and local clubs be consulted and included during this process of trail closure and any scheduled relocations. I think you'll find that full cooperation from NYSA and the local clubs to participate and understand that maybe some of these trails do need to be closed to be in compliance or relocated, but we just ask that we're part of this process and we're included on that. The snowmobile community supports the efforts of the review board. Conservation and preservation of lands is a must, but there are areas where recreation, conservation, and snowmobiling can coexist. Snowmobiling community respectfully requests that snowmobile recreation is considered and supported as revisions are considered during the review process. And I'll just reiterate that, you know, please keep us in mind, keep us informed. We're going to do our best to voice our opinions, attend these review sessions, submit some comments. And we just want to be part of the whole process, not saying you can't close trails or we don't support it, but, you know, if we take away from here, where can we add them to? And what does that do not only to that local trail system, but the trail system as a whole? So appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bob. Ron Conowitz.
So I am one of the few people that is not going to speak about motorized access in any form whatsoever. My name is Ron Conowitz. I have lived for the last 45 years full-time in Keene. I spent all my summers there prior to that. I am 70 years old. I worked as a volunteer for the New York State Forest Rangers, search and rescue for the 45 years. I was a teacher in Keene Central for 35 years before I retired. You know, I've lived in Keene. 90% of our town is owned by the state of New York. It's great. It's wilderness. It's a wonderful place to stay. But you know what? We have absolutely no control over any of the decisions in the town that I live in, which includes most of the high peaks. This document right here, this is the original map, state map 1972 for the state land master plan. This is the booklet that came with it for the state land master plan. As I said previously at another meeting, that came to me via the son of the bowling alley owner in Willsboro, who was given this copy directly by Peter Payne when the plan was going to go forward back in the 1970s, assuring him that, yes, you know, this is the plan, but every 5 years we're going to be revising it and looking at it for changes. So living in Keene, you would think, oh, that's a good thing, because in the master plan, like it's all wilderness, it says ski touring should be encouraged. Ski touring should be encouraged in three different spots in here, in wilderness and wild forest. Not only should it be encouraged, but it should be a compatible use for wilderness and wild forest. Unfortunately, when they wrote this plan, though, they didn't actually put a definition in for ski touring trails. And probably 7 or 8 years later, maybe because of Van Hoverberg, I'm not sure why, I was still in college, they wrote a definition for cross-country ski trails. Maybe they were concerned about what was happening at Van Hoverberg. I don't know. Maybe Dave knows. But it talks in there about not doing any type of grooming. You know, those trails are 20 to 40 feet wide. That's not anything like what we're asking for. The DEC right now is currently working on guidelines, which would actually work for us with some minor tweaking. And as far as some of the input that we've had into that document, hopefully they'll make a few changes which will work for us as ski tourers. Why they picked the term cross country, I'm still not sure. But we're also looking for a slight definition tweak. A definition, it would look like this. A marked trail designated for travel by skis, located and designed to provide access in a manner causing the least effect on the local environment. And this slump definition mimics what was passed most recently about 10 years ago for bike trails. And they've been very successful. They have been built with a lot of planning. And we are not looking for bike trails. We are looking for ski touring trails that conform with both Article 14 and the State Land Master Plan in both wilderness and wild forests. Ski touring is mentioned. It's time to tweak the definition so that those of us that live in the town of Keene and all around the park can enjoy ski touring as it written in the original State Land Master Plan. Thank you so much for letting me speak. And yeah, not about motor vehicles at all.
Thank you, Ron. Is there anyone who did not get a chance to sign up to speak or has decided that they'd like to comment now on the record? Okay, this concludes today's Adirondack Park State Land Master Plan public hearing. the agency thanks you for your participation. Please review the 2024 proposed amendment package that is found on our website and submit your comments to the agency for consideration by December 2nd. Thank you.